2011 Grammy nominee Betty LaVette will use her sultry, soulful voice and years of musical talent to transport the audience at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield this coming weekend back to the golden age of James Brown and Aretha Franklin. In 1962, Betty LaVette's first single, My Man, He's a Loving Man, was released. The record charted number 7 R&B and put her on her first national tour with Benny King and Otis Redding. There was no stopping her after that. LaVette went on to record a string of hits throughout the years, including Let Me Down Easy, He Made a Woman Out of Me, Do Your Duty, Thank You for Loving Me, and Right in the Middle. She will perform Saturday night at 7 o'clock at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. It's a great pleasure to welcome Betty LaVette to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, baby.
You have such a gorgeous voice, and I'm curious as
gorgeous.
Well, don't you think? I mean, it's just beautiful. It's stunning, and I'm curious as to, was there a self-awareness in you at some point in your life where you realized that you had a great voice?
Oh, that took a very, very long time. That's why I laughed when you said gorgeous, because my voice, I've always said, is more like James Brown's than Dionne Warwick's. So when I was much younger, I wanted to sound like the rest of the girls. Mm. And I didn't. And I didn't appreciate, well, no kid appreciates uniqueness. and neither did I. So it was many years before I would accept that I, too, was a singer. So no, there was no early self-awareness anyway.
Right, and I can understand that because, as you say, the uniqueness that you have is there's that shagginess to the voice, but it gives it such nuance. It gives it such a different sound. It isn't smooth. It isn't mellow. It really there's so much more there. There are so many more facets to it, which to me makes the listening experience, well, as I said earlier, beautiful.
Well, when you try to get kids, they say, well, if Johnny goes and jumps off a roof, are you going to jump off too? You know, we all wanted to be alike, and I didn't sound like the girls, and I resented that. I wanted to sound like they did. So, I mean, it's a kid, no matter whether the kid sings, dances, or flies an airplane, is still a kid.
So at what point did you realize what you had was good and could be to put you into that R&B club and that you would be someone who people would want to listen to and buy records from?
Oh, I've probably been singing 15 years. I've probably been singing 15 years before I accepted the fact that some people liked me, but I wasn't ready to accept the fact that a whole lot of people could like me. So yeah, it took quite a while.
And that was for you to find your own sound, right? I mean, not just the voice, but what you wanted to sing and how you wanted to sing it and who you would sing
it with. The manager that I had, Jim Lewis, who I always say made the artist you see before you today, I kept trying to sound like other people, and he kept trying to say, well, you can sing that song, but you sing it like you sing it. And I was like, I don't want to sing it like I sing. I want to sing it like they sung it. So he brought me from miles and miles away.
You were born in Michigan, and you grew up in your family moved to Detroit. And you make the point that, unlike many of your contemporaries, you did not get your start in church, but it was really in your living room.
You know, absolutely. My parents sold corn liquor during segregation. And in Muskegon, Michigan, I mean, if you were black and you wanted a drink after work, you had to come to my house. You certainly couldn't step into the local neighborhood bar. So people came to my house, which meant that the entertainers and the gospel singers who came through Michigan came there as well. And any time you get a room full of musicians drunk, they're all going to sing. So
some things never change, do they, Betty?
Right, right.
So, you know, and then you would have these incredible people that would come to your living room, everyone from Dinah Washington and Red Foley. I mean, this was an incredible group that would come to a house that was filled with music.
Yes. Yes, it was mostly black. It was just that my mother loved country western music as well as blues and gospel. So we had a jukebox in the living room, and all of these songs were on it. So by virtue of that, I learned gospel and rhythm and blues, all of it at the same time. So I didn't grow into anything. I knew it all. When I started singing, I knew songs by everybody from Red Foley to B.B. King.
When you would hear those songs coming from that jukebox, it seems that you knew that you wanted to perform at a young age. At 15, 16 years old, you knew that that's what you wanted to do.
Yes, but I didn't know that I could because I didn't know anyone else who did. I, you know, there, and especially one who sounded like me. When I first heard Laverne Baker and Ruth Brown, I was overjoyed because I said, hey, they sound a bit more like I do. but I knew that that was what I liked to do. And I knew, but I didn't even want to do it because I didn't think I could do it. I didn't think that that would happen to a little girl on the north end of Detroit. So it was just something that I wanted to do.
For you, what was the big break? When you look at that 15 years you said that you were trying and finding, what was the big break for you?
Well, I started out as a groupie. So I just happened to be there hanging with the singers when my first producer, Johnny Mae Matthews, heard me, and along with some of the other singers, and they said, well, you can sing. And I was like, no one else had ever said that other than my parents. You know, so I, and then, of course, as a little girl, when I would sing there, when we had the jukebox, people would say, oh, she's so cute, or that kind of thing. But I didn't know anyone in the record industry. So when someone in the record industry said that I could, as far as I'm concerned, that was my big break.
When you look at a song and you take a song that's been around for so long, I mean, one of the things that so many people admire about you is that you are able to make it your own. Is that in part due to your voice and obviously the styling of it, right, of being able to interpret it in a way that is new?
Well, it that always tickles me because if I heard a song by Red Foley, I certainly couldn't sound like him. So making it my own would only mean singing it. It would certainly sound like me if I sung it. So I don't, it's not a deliberate effort to sound different than everyone else. As I said, I had to accept that I sounded different than everyone else. So it certainly, I didn't look at it as one of my value points at first.
You're going to be on the stage at the Colonial Theater on Saturday night. You still enjoy going out and going from town to town and being on stage?
No, only after I get on the stage. I do not enjoy the going from town to town. You know, gosh, I'm 66 years old. You know, I'd rather everybody come over here to my house. But I admit that's a part of it, and I've waited so many years for them to call. I certainly am willing to show up at this point. But when I'm getting ready to do it or when we're going to the next town, no, I don't like it. But after I get on the stage, then I'm like, oh, I'm up here, and they're all looking at me.
And what is it about that experience? What is it that you want to share with that audience?
Well, it's I don't really do it for the audience. I do it for myself, and they just happen to catch it.
And okay, so what are you doing for you then? Because you want it to be different.
It feels good to me. It feels good to me to be able to express, just to express. I mean, I get the opportunity to cry in front of a whole gang of people. Sometimes it's about something that's sad, and sometimes that's happened, and sometimes it's about something I remember that's sad. And then I get a chance to act silly or bounce around and dance. I'm a benevolent, egomaniacal person. When I say benevolent, it's because, like, off stage, I don't really act like that.
But on stage, it gives you a certain power.
Yes, it does. It certainly does. And I try never to abuse that power, and I'm grateful for it. As I said, I just thought that this was something that I would not do. I didn't know that this kind of thing could happen to me. And then when it did, I knew immediately that that was where I belonged. I didn't think, well, oh, I should go back to school, or I should, this is exactly where I belong, right here. And I'm sure if Mother Ernesta could see me now, she'd say, I knew it was something wrong with that girl, but I just didn't know what.
So in January 2009, before President-elect Barack Obama, you're on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial with Jon Bon Jovi singing A Change Is Gonna Come. And HBO showed this. It just seemed like such a beautiful moment, obviously, for those listening. But I can't imagine that that's something that you can easily get out of your head.
Oh, no, honey. I meant there was more happening to me than anybody else that was there. First of all, next to Pete Seeger, I was the oldest person there. I was the only, I was looking at the first black president. The biggest audience that had ever seen me in my whole 50-year career was watching me. It was there were so many things going on in my head, you couldn't even believe it. My cousin was telling me, she said, I don't even know how you remember the words, because I was telling her everything that was going through my mind. She said, where'd you have room to remember the words? Thank goodness it was a song, though, that's kind of like a black national anthem, so I don't know if there's anybody black that doesn't know the words to A Change Is Gonna Come.
So you were able to pull it off, and then obviously the beauty of then you performing with Jon Bon Jovi was also very big, because the two voices together was really remarkable.
It was quite a thing to do. I really am. It's the most remarkable point. That and learning to tap dance for Bubbling Brown Sugar are the most remarkable things that have ever happened to me.
And that was a Broadway smash, and that was, what did that run for, 6 years?
Maybe 8 years.
Wow.
Maybe eight. I didn't do, of course, the whole 8 years. I think the show had been running almost 2 years when I joined it. I joined it to replace the lead person, Vivian Reed, and Honey Coles was in the show and taught me how to do my little tap steps. And you talk about empowering. You may not know a lot of people who can sing, but I'll bet you don't know anybody who can tap dance.
And to do both, well, forget about it. You gonna tap dance on Saturday night?
No, as the kids say, there will be no more busting of those moves.
Well, you're going to be doing a lot on that stage. Betty LeVette will perform Saturday night at 7 o'clock at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. You can go to theberkshiretheatergroup.org for more information. Betty, you're an absolute delight. I can't wait to have you here in town.
Thank you. Will I see you?
Yeah, I hope so,
yes. Will I see you when I'm there?
Yes, I would love to do that.
I can't wait to see you guys. So come backstage and say something to me.
Betty, I love you. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, baby. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks Bye-bye. Very much. Again, Betty LeVette will perform Saturday night at 7 o'clock at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield. Go to berkshiretheatergroup.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.